was stronger in the sunshine of the Cayman Islands because there were other reasons. That told Americans a lot, that he was paying under 15% of his income. What his taxes were as a fraction of his income were much, much lower than a plumber or some other person who's working for a living. Something was going on that Americans said was unfair. We would like to know, is Trump paying a fair share? You know, he's engaged in bad practices in Trump University, stiffed his workers and all kinds of bad practices. We want to know, is he a good citizen? Is he paying his fair share of taxes? So I think it's really important, and I think it's really important that his vice president release his taxes as well.
Joe Stiglitz, we're going to have to leave it there. Hillary advisor Joe Stiglitz, Nobel Prize-winning economist, Columbia University professor. That does it for our show. I'll be doing a report back from the conventions and two talks Friday, July 29th at Provincetown Town Hall in Massachusetts, Saturday, July 30th on Martha's Vineyard at Old Wailing Church. You can check out the details at democracynow.org. Very happy birthday to Rob Young. Special thanks to Laura Deutsch, Gretchen Clousing, and Ryan Saunders as we broadcast here the whole crew at Philly Cam. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkner, Mincha, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Tarina Nadura, Robbie Heron, Hani Massoud, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Dennis Moynihan, Chuck Sturridge. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning. It is KBOO Portland, your community radio station. A busy Thursday morning. Coming up in an hour, Chris Andre will host Air Cascadia at 10:15. It'll be Flashpoints at 11, Between the Covers. And then at 11:30, it's the film show this week. So stick around for that. But next, stick around for Press Watch. It's news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell reporting live from Philadelphia, where she's been covering the activities in the street during the Democratic convention. Per Fogering is in the studio to talk with Teresa, and we'll hear from them both right after this on KBOO.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of One Flaming Arrow Intertribal Film Festival 2016, bringing Native American and Indigenous independent film to Portland, Oregon, July 28th through the 31st. Opening night at Clinton Street Theater with showings through the weekend at Hollywood Theater and Rainmaker Gallery. Please consider supporting independent media. More information can be found at oneflamingarrow.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Well, good morning. This is Press Watch, as you can tell by the lovely balalaika music. And I'm Per Fogering here in Portland. And our host, Teresa Mitchell, is in Philadelphia. Teresa, are you there?
In Philadelphia, PA. You bet I am.
It must be noontime. Must be ready to bite into one of those Philly cheesesteak sandwiches.
I haven't tried that yet. Maybe tomorrow.
That's a real gut bomb, I hear. Anyways. Oh, so have you, were you able to get into the building at all, or are you just staying outside?
Oh, no, my intention the whole time was not even to go into the DNC. There's a lot of action happening there, but, you know, I kind of turned my nose up at it because I view it as an infomercial for the politically powerful.
Oh, you bet, yes.
And it has turned out that there has been a great deal of action outside the DNC, and I've been glad to be around to catch some of it. Some of the biggest movement, I would say, is towards socialism. And if this is the right time, then I'll comment on that for a minute.
Well, let's see. You got a couple. You record a few talks with who?
Well, I've got Jill Stein, one with Jill Stein. Mm-hmm. That's the 4-minute one, and the other one is with Chris hedges, and it's a, it's a near riot, and it's about 8 minutes long. So I don't know if you'll want to run those since you've got your show coming up as well. But I will say that Philadelphia seems to have spawned a new political movement. There are, and I'll explain, there are thousands upon thousands of leftists here, networking connections, talking about how best to move forward. And the kicker is they don't all understand that they are leftists. They've become leftists over the last week, and they plan to organize support for socialist candidates. And for them, socialism is a word that is bandied about in debate, and there's a lot of debate happening, but they're not calling them socialist candidates. But they're promoting socialist ideas. And, well, I knew from press reports that there would be a great number of people here in Philly, but I rather imagined that the breakdown would be something like 60-40 with Bernie supporters in the majority and a bunch of Hillary signs. Well, that's not the case at all. Bernie has ruled the streets in Philadelphia, I mean utterly, and one must look long and carefully to see any similar homemade endorsements of Hillary. And I'm wondering, Per, what did you think it was going to be like? I mean, because I came here thinking, well, you know, there's going to be factions. It's not that.
I was wondering, I did hear somewhere that the police have been pretty cool. Is that true?
The police have been very cool compared to Portland police, I would like to say rather pointedly. Mm-hmm. I have not been seeing the RoboCops. There's been a division of the, well, not a division, I don't want to use a military term. There was a flying squad of those down at the FDR Center across, where they've got many, many protesters holed up across from the Wells Fargo Center, which is the big Coliseum that has unfortunately been prostituted by that corporate name. No offense to prostitutes. I respect sex workers. But getting back to the people in the streets, it's been Bernie this and Bernie that. It's been signs for Bernie, birds with fluffy white hair, giant puffs of Bernie and those glasses, and then great clouds of people pass through City Hall area, where I've been mostly hanging out. Sometimes they're shouting slogans or banging drums, and other times they're just bearing their multitudinous signs while wilting quietly in the heat and humidity. And the heat is like a political force this week. I mean, it's got me. Whew. So the energy on the streets around City Hall is terrific. When I was a kid in elementary school, I imagined that Philadelphia was a sort of giant open-air library where serious people in, well, thigh silks and three-corner hats would debate the philosophy and implementation of democracy. And I remember that little kid over the last few days because you can get in a discussion of revolutionary change right here, day or night, just by saying something loud enough on the sidewalk. I'm not even making this up. I wish it could always be like this. But after today, the DNC will be over, and this efflorescence of good-natured political thought will evaporate with it.
Well, who are some of the groups that are there? Any stand out? Or?
Occupy DNC has been here. As I said, it's the Bernie people, Bernie this and Bernie mm-hmm. that. Bernie Sanders supporters from all over the country. They've come from Los Angeles. They've come from the center of the continent. They've come from Texas. I talked to people who traveled in a sort of pilgrimage from across the country, and that's enough for a memorable experience in itself for them. But they're developing this sort of cohesion because I can see that many or most of them, well, I won't hedge it, they're developing a strong cohesion. Many or most of them, perhaps naively or blindly, thought that somehow by force of their massive and unprecedented presence and mountainous desire, Sanders would not go down to defeat and assimilation, but instead would come to some grand bargain. And what they discovered was that Sanders did as he said he would, endorsing the preordained nuclear-powered, bankster-funded neoliberal candidate Hillary Clinton. And the Sanders faithful did weep. And the corporate media and the conformists mocked them for weeping, but they wept openly in the streets here. I saw it, so I say again, I have never seen anything like this. But I am not mocking them. The energy mm-hmm. of Occupy has very much been here, and that's a positive and building energy. This shared experience of struggle, pilgrimage, disillusionment, and convergence has been life-altering for these people, and many are saying so. And a powerful forging has been taking place here in Philadelphia, and I'm hearing people say that they will first make their revenge felt against the Democratic Party in every office save that of the president, and second, that they will now build a people's movement, an anti-racist, anti-imperialist, working-class movement, and they will take their new social media connections with them to weave that new strong net. And the funny thing is, apparently none of this is, going into the hotel and the way to see the Hillary people. is to go into a hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're inside. And I can't exaggerate that metaphor. The Hillary people are inside everybody.
Real insiders. Well, you know, one thing that did happen inside the convention yesterday was that Leon Panetta got drowned out by a chorus of people yelling, "No more war." And this is coming from the Oregon and the Washington delegations.
Hooray for the badass Oregon delegation.
And I guess that I read somewhere that the Texas people were involved too, but I'm not sure the connection. And what happened was that they turned the lights off inside the building, and so the Oregon folks they held up their little I guess they can turn on their smartphones, and so there was this little lights coming from their section of the meeting. But they
makes
really
me so proud.
That was pretty good. So it's like things are happening inside the meeting also.
Yes. Yes, things are happening there. But as I said, for me, I wanted to be on the outside and see what was happening mm-hmm. there. And for me, you know, to just sort of dive in and check what's happening with the Hillary camp, I had to ask one of them or, you know, just go into the hotel. And, you know, for the Hillary camp, for them, the nuisance of the Sanders insurgency has been purged, and now it's possible for them to move forward into their new shiny presidency without worrying too much about those ungrateful hippies. And they mock the Sandernistas if they think about them at all. Certainly history has now passed by the socialist candidate and his hordes, and that any abuse the Hillary camp dispenses is well-deserved. And Hillary, you know, you've probably seen, looks exultant on the stage, and the big screens above the dais showed her breaking through the glass, you know, as if Benazir Bhutto and Angela Merkel and just did not exist. But I think that the Green Party's Jill Stein is the real winner here. She was received at the Socialist Convergence like a cold beer on $1,000 bill for a coaster. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if this would be a good time to run that tape.
Why don't you? Let's do that.
Okay. This is Jill Stein at the Socialist Convergence.
We're at an incredibly transformative moment right now. This is kind of the fulfillment of the work that so many of us have been doing for so long. Work in the social movements, work in truly radical political parties that lift up a socialist vision of true alternative to this corporate predatory capitalism that is really coming to a dead end. It's time for us to say goodbye to these zombie political parties that we are seeing on full display here, and to stand up in this transformative moment. And, you know, props to Bernie, props to everyone who's been a part of the Bernie movement for creating this unbelievable moment. And what a, you know, what a wake-up moment this has been, when so many people became engaged in the political process, with Bernie putting on the table a socialist agenda of sorts, democratic socialism, even launching the word socialism, which has been totally new in the political dialogue, that has just opened the floodgates to real questions about what is our political system, that we don't need to have a predatory economy. We can have an economy that works for everyday people, that not only provides living wages, but actually provides the right to a job for everyone. That can be a part of what we are demanding in this economy, as well as the right to health care as a human right through a Medicare for All system, and the right to public higher education as a human right. And the right to bail out students who are in debt the same way we bailed out the crooks on Wall Street. It's about time to bail out the students. So Bernie launched that agenda under this umbrella of what a world of democratic socialism might look like. He wasn't quite there yet on student debt, but we're taking the baton from Bernie now, and we're continuing to run with it. More strong and more powerful, because, you know, who knows why, but Bernie ran up against some limits for what you can do inside of a counter-revolutionary party, which is why we need a truly revolutionary party of the 99%, a party for working people, a party of diversity, a party for African-American people and immigrants and women and indigenous people, a party that stands up for the justice that we actually deserve and that we've been fighting for. So Bernie kind of helped raise our expectations. The Democratic Party tried to take those expectations and shove them into Hillary Clinton's campaign, which I think for most of us is not going to work. And what happened when those emails were leaked on Friday is that the true colors of this counter-revolutionary party are on display for all to see. The system was rigged against Bernie Sanders from the start.
For KBOO Portland, this is Teresa Mitchell.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about those emails. I mean, this is an amazing thing that happened to me. I thought it was very important that, you know, these emails were leaked showing that the, you know, that the Democratic National Committee had been rigging the thing against Bernie Sanders. And this is a basically, it was a very sleazy and dishonorable thing for them to do. But right away, the Clinton crowd turned it into a kind of a diatribe against Putin, that somehow, you know, they blamed the Russians for hacking into the Democratic emails, which, as far as I can tell, there is no, the evidence is very slim that the Russians did it, although everyone is blaming Putin. They've been blaming Putin ever since I don't know when. And so what's overlooked in all this is that, you know, we have been hacking other foreign leaders for a long time. Angela Merkel comes to mind. We've also hacked into Dilma Rousseff, the erstwhile president of Brazil. And it's very interesting that, I don't know, a couple months ago when I interviewed Pepe Escobar, he said that the National Security Agency, you know, the big ear in the sky, had passed on info about Dilma to these Brazilian plotters to get her impeached. So the U.S. has got a horrible record as far as interfering with other countries. And to me, this is a very bad omen for the future because, you know, the Hillary crowd is so quick to blame Putin, and all the good little Democratic liberals have been lining up to blame Putin. And what will they do in the future? Well, if Hillary gets elected, will they follow her into another war? Doesn't look very good to me. And I think one thing, I kind of guess that Hillary Clinton will be our next president. Will she try and pick Victoria Nuland as her Secretary of State?
That's a frightening idea.
Yeah. Well, I think it could happen. So, Therese, has any of that leaked out into the people out there in the street?
Well, that's a good question. Let me think about that. I mean, first, I want to say that's very perceptive as usual for you, Per. Thanks for laying that out. I think that people in the street, by and large, by which I mean people in downtown Philadelphia concerned with the convention right now, are focusing mostly on other things, but to the extent that they're talking about those emails, I can scarcely bring them up without someone just open, and I say this is in the context of Bernie supporters. For Bernie supporters, this just brings open an immediate scoffing of the idea that there's a whole to-do about how the emails were leaked as opposed to what is in the emails, mm-hmm. which, as you mentioned, of course, is the fact that the Democratic National Convention, instead of having an open primary, rigged and threw the primary and scotched democracy in the Democratic Party. And that's what people should be talking about. So, I think the Democratic Party is making a mistake. They're playing Trump's game by playing the Russia angle, because I think they're trying to get people to think Russia, Trump, traitor, this sort of thing. It doesn't work that way. Trump is playing them.
Well, they're trying to make Trump out to be Putin's useful idiot, is what that one term is. And to me, this is kind of crazy. I mean, it's as far as I can tell, Putin has really been very clear about stepping back from the whole thing. He says that he did not praise Trump in any way. He just kind of, I don't know, he made some innocuous remark, which has been really taken out of proportion. But it's really weird that the Democrats are kind of they're sort of doing McCarthyite tactics on Donald Trump. You know, not that he doesn't deserve it, but well, he deserves other things, but I don't know if he deserves this one. But
you know, the part of America that's concerned with honor, truth, purity, and duty, in other words, the dyed-in-the-wool conservatives, they're going to vote for Trump, and this sort of thing that Trump does works for them, and it almost doesn't matter what the substance is. There's a meta that they react to, and the meta is Trump poking the establishment. So Trump's winning this debate, and I mean, not that it's not really a debate. He's consolidating his base, and I think the Democrats really should enlarge their base by be playing to the Sandernistas. They should be enlarging their base instead of purging them as they are doing now, because I think come the election, the fact is a determined bunch of right-wingers could be the plurality that wins the election. And right now, the enthusiasm for Clinton, well, I'm not seeing it in this town. Like I said, if I want to see enthusiasm for Clinton, I've got to go inside one of the spendy hotels.
What are the Clinton people like? I mean, you have any kind of little anecdotes or any particular people stand out or...
Well, you know, I don't have something cute. I am seeing a class divide.
Mm-hmm.
Not absolutely. I've been thinking, of course, about the race divide with people, people of color, largely going for Clinton. And the way I see it, if I understand it correctly, is that if you're a person of color, you can't necessarily afford, you don't have the privilege to experiment with something new and different, a socialist candidate, an outsider. And it is much more, you know, just from experience, it is much more likely that whatever coalition you're building with the people in power might work. And so let me expand the notion of the streets of Philadelphia. I'm staying in West Philadelphia. I'm across from a couple of houses that do not have power or even water.
Mm.
And for these people, it doesn't matter if Clinton or Trump gets in. There might be some hope that enough of a coalition is built with Clinton and that there are enough people with enough wrenches inside that effort that what is essentially, obviously, for centuries, a hostile regime will allow some reform, some slack. You know, I can't say they'll get the water turned on, but you see where I'm going with this? And so for Sanders, that's not, I mean, for a person in that position to look at Sanders, that's an unknown quality. You know what that is. So if you're into ideology and you have the time and to check out what's actually being said and the context of it, then maybe you go for Sanders. Here again, I'm out on a limb. I'm a white person speaking about people of color, but this is what I'm picking up. This is as best I can understand it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe we should open up the lines if people want to call in with their impressions of this convention. And if there are any people of color who are in favor of Hillary Clinton, tell us why. I mean, the number is 503-231-8187. So... I just got this. Here's a thing I have been saving. This is a quote from Jimmy Carter. This is, gee whiz, from last August. And he's on the Tom Hartman show. And he said, this is, quote, the U.S. is, quote, an oligarchy with unlimited political bribery. That was former President Jimmy Carter saying that.
He can afford it. He's an ex-president. He's in his 90s. He can afford to say what he wants now, and that's very interesting, yeah.
Well, it's, you know, when you think of the things that Carter actually did, I think he tried in his limited way, but he also was responsible for some pretty terrible things, like, you know, he went along with Brzezinski's bright idea to arm the Afghan Mujahideen against the Soviets, and look how that all turned out. But, you know, it's like presidents seem to say the best things after they're out of office.
You know, that's it's an interesting thing to look at Jimmy Carter, because there's definitely some throwbacks being attempted during this political process. The Trump people, for example, are looking at Nixon, for God's sake. They like Nixon. But to look at Carter, I mean, you have to ask yourself, would a Sanders presidency have looked something like Carter? Because, you know, Carter gets in, he wants to do his thing. He's not, I mean, Carter was a reformer to some degree. He had some good ideas, and he was just absolutely crushed by the existing establishment. And as you know, Fair, and books have been written about the betrayal of Carter by the national security establishment.
The deep state, yes.
Yes, so I...
Whoops, are you there?
Hi.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh.
Hello?
Yes, are you a caller?
I am.
Okay, what's your name?
My name is Malia.
Okay, what do you got to say? What do you like to tell us?
Hello?
I am still here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, I was just going to give my two cents on the convention. And I guess I'm just having a difficult time being a Bernie follower, jumping on board with supporting Hillary. I do my homework, and I followed the Clintons for years. And the type of crimes that these people have committed, it's just horrific, and the fact that they get off the hook is such a slap in the face to the rest of America that, yes, Donald Trump is the lesser of the
Hello?
Two evils, possibly, but I cannot see voting for someone out of fear when the other person is equally as evil. And the ironic thing is Bill Clinton is the one who put more people in jail for low-end crimes, and yet these Clintons seem to be doing everything Bill's been accused of, rape, and it seems to be a very valid, but by more than six people. And, you know, the repercussions that happen to the 99% don't seem to happen to the Clintons. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very concerned for that issue alone. If my, you know, perspective is really going to be taken up by Hillary Clinton being a Bernie follower, I almost feel there's a level that Bernie failed his people by throwing in the towel so quickly, because clearly what Hillary represents is so such a polarity compared to Bernie that I just can't find any you know, understanding of why everyone wants the Bernie people to jump on board with Hillary.
Well, it's very interesting, you know, what you brought up about Hillary Clinton. Of course, a lot of Democrats think, well, that is the, she called the vast conspiracy, right-wing conspiracy. But it's, you know, there is some factual basis to some of these accusations. And if you want to go to a good source, there is a website called the Progressive Review. And it was started years ago by a journalist named Sam Smith, who's sort of semi-retired now. But Sam Smith is certainly not a conservative. He's a kind of a populist Democrat. And he had an archive of all the things that the Clinton White House had done. And so if people want to find out more about that, I recommend do a web search on Progressive Review, Clinton Archives, and see if they are still available. So
I've been there, and a lot of it is. And everything from Bill Clinton signing the 1994, I think it was like the crime, it had to do with the Crime Act, and it's the one I just mentioned. Everything from being accused of six women and to read their stories about the violent sexual attacks. Mm-hmm. And the fact that everyone thinks Trump's out of line sexually, it's very concerning to see the level of crime that both Clintons have done and the fact that they just don't get prosecuted and it remains so much under the carpet. That's my big thorn right there, and that's where the buck stops with me, is that I won't even say who I may vote for because I don't know. It's such a complex. And for me, it is mentally and emotionally arduous to be hornswoggled into casting my vote for a woman whose everything she stands for, I'm against. And she goes whichever way the wind blows. You can see interviews on the very website that you were talking about of Hillary in her early years, who clearly more than once said that she is very much against same-sex marriage. And it just goes on. And so the very issues that are at stake today, I think she's very much against. She just won't say because she needs these votes.
To me, one of the things that should be looked at more is, when Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas, that was at a time when the CIA was sending arms to the Contra rebels in Nicaragua. And bringing back loads of drugs. And they landed at this little airport in Mena, Arkansas. And Bill Clinton was governor at the time. And it's beyond belief. I mean, I just can't believe that he was not aware of this going on. It was not an Arkansas operation, of course. It was a federal CIA thing going on. But he had to be aware of it. And some say that he got his share of the proceeds or whatever. It's and that is something that should be looked into. Also, one thing I heard was that when Clinton was impeached, that he told the Republicans that if they voted him out of office, he would reveal all that he knew about the Mena airport. So that is something that people should investigate for themselves. Try and see what you can dig up on the web.
Well, that's my biggest problem I'm having with so many people right now is that they're just not doing their homework, or else they've forgotten. Responding to fear only produces, a heightened, outcome of fear itself. And I think that people really need to think twice about stopping. I mean, this might sound idealistic, but I say let's stop everything and let's clean up this election and let's see who really won. Because if you can recall what happened with Gore and Bush, think of how different our world would have been had Gore been able to step into the presidency that he literally won. Mm-hmm. And now the same thing is going on with Bernie and Hillary, and the fact that they're so different. There's no way, there is absolutely no way that Hillary is going to or even could fulfill the needs of the people. I don't think she even understands what they were, as Bernie did. But the Clinton Foundation is just it's a criminal gang house, in my opinion. If you read about it, it's tremendous. And then just on a last note, I would go so far as to call the Clinton terrorists when you see how they dealt with stopping the publicity of the crimes, especially the sexual violent ones that Bill did, against six women who have very, very articulate standing cases. And Hillary stood beside him against the women whose pictures, I mean, obviously you can see that these people, are telling the truth. No one would accuse Bill Clinton in the position that he was in of doing these awful crimes had he not done them. And the very fact that, he can get off the hook for doing things really opens a door to other things that they can do when she becomes president that are just not in the best interest of the American people.
Well, thank you very much for bringing all that up. Folks out there in Radio Land who are listening, look it up for yourselves. Check it out because, we don't know everything. Maybe there's lots of things we don't know. So, that's what the internet is for, if it's for anything. So our caller brought up the Clinton Foundation. Well, I've got this article here. This is from the New York Times, April 23rd of 2015. And the headline is, "Cash Flow to Clinton Foundation Amid Russian Uranium Deal." And the gist of the story is that Bill Clinton was paid $500,000 to give a speech in Moscow on behalf of this Russian uranium producer that was, I guess, had just bought a big share of Canadian uranium mining. A very interesting article. I haven't really absorbed it all. It goes into a lot of detail, but it is there in the New York Times, April 23rd, 2015. So, Teresa, you back with us?
I think I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, then. Well, you're reminding me of
Peter Schweitzer's book, Clinton Cash. He said the activities of Hillary Clinton during her time as Secretary of State intersect with the favor seeking of the Clinton Foundation. And he said it's strange so few of her publicly released emails touch on the Clinton Foundation. Maybe the private ones do. So there's more to do with emails than just the DNC. And I'm wondering how all that's going to work out.
Well, apparently Julian Assange says there are more. There's more information from WikiLeaks coming. So, there's still a few months before Election Day. Who knows what we will see? One thing that strikes me as far as the Clinton Foundation, and I would like to find out more about this. We do hear about it on Flashpoints because their co-host, Kevin Pina, who is one of the most knowledgeable people in the world about what's going on in Haiti, has talked about the role the Clintons have played in recent Haitian history. And it's a very a sorry role they've played. I mean, they have been, the gist of it is that they have been sort of pushing Haiti into a kind of a neoliberal, I don't know what, lackey or something, you know, where they would work in baseball factories and clothing factories and tourism.
And even lower wages than they had before. I mean, the wages mm-hmm. they had were just incredibly pitiful. I mean, I don't want to misspeak, but I think they were like 60 cents an hour, and now mm-hmm. they're even less.
Right, and that they would neglect their own farmers in favor of imported foods, which we can see how wonderfully that has worked out for Venezuela, which that's another topic. But and then of course Clinton's role in getting Aristide out of power, who was twice elected and I guess twice removed from power. And
well, let's talk about imperialism. I mean, go ahead.
Well, that's tell me more about it.
you brought up Venezuela, and it made me think of the situation there. You know, the oil that they've been selling depended on, and my information is a little out of date, but it depended on at least $50 a barrel mm-hmm. base mm-hmm. because the oil they were selling needed extensive refining. It's very, very black, very tarry oil, very thick stuff, and it requires special refineries. And when the world market is down to the point that that it is, well, they and other oil-producing nations don't get their funds, but especially Venezuela doesn't, because no one wants to pay the extra price for their oil if they mm-hmm. can't sell it at a profit when it's under $50, and they can't sell it for much of a profit when it's close. So Venezuela is very much being continuously undermined by the United States, and of course, a big part of their problem is that Chavez is dead of a suspicious cancer. And Maduro has been doing the best he can, but he's holding too hard onto Chavez's previous economic positions, which had to do with that oil selling at a good price, at $100 a barrel or close
mm-hmm.
to it.
So, right.
It's true that their internal machinations are lacking and causing a problem. But the big problem that Venezuela has is the same problem that it's had for all these decades, and that's the United States.
Oh, well, they left themselves very vulnerable by importing all their food. But we do have another caller on the line. Camila's on the line. Good morning, Camila.
Hi. Good morning, Pierre. I am a 74-year-old black man. I'm not a Hillary supporter, however.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a somewhat different take from Teresa mm-hmm. on the motivation. You know, I think it's not essentially poor black people who are going to be in favor of Hillary's campaign. It's going to be those people who have a stake in it. That's why you see all of the politicians, all of the people who are going to benefit from their success. I mean, it's just like some of the slaves during the Civil War went to stay with their masters and hope that they would stay in a safe, warm house, but took the risk and found out that it didn't work that way. You know, I mean, I think you have to recognize that the black people in this nation are not single monolithic.
Right.
And we have a wide range of opinion. Just look at Mumia and his recommendation that we read what Michelle Alexander had to say about the Clintons in The Nation magazine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, regardless of race, there are always going to be some people who take that bet that even the people who don't work for their interests are going to be a safer solution than the ones who really are fighting for the welfare of the people. Also, I was a lifelong Democrat, and I will no longer support the Democratic Party. And I will say one thing that I've been thinking, and I haven't said out loud, but I think a Trump victory may hasten the revolution, unfortunately.
may hasten a lot of things, but go, yes, all right. Teresa, you said you had something?
Oh, no, I was just exulting over the fact that you got someone to call in and straighten out the record, so thanks for that.
Okay.
You know, this brings to mind, I'm going to put a little plug for OPB. They had, I think it was yesterday, you know, they have their team there at the convention, and they their host, Dave Miller, on, Think Out Loud, was riding with some Uber driver, some black guy, and the guy was sort of talking about his view of what was going on, and it impressed Dave Miller so much he recorded it. And so they played this, a couple minutes of this Uber driver in Philly talking about his view of politics in this country today. I thought it was very, very interesting. So I will put in a plug where a plug is due.
Well, yeah, sure. And actually, I was talking with them yesterday. We stayed in touch. They did not have people out in the protest, so I let them know my opinion of what was going on.
Mm.
And KBOO's, I say KBOO's, Julie, who was involved with KBOO News some mm-hmm. years ago, is there. And mm-hmm. yeah, so they've got a good crew going there. It's
Are you there?
I am there. I was just thinking there was some media at the Jill Stein press conference,
mm-hmm.
Aside from just the non-corporate media. As a matter of fact, I would say there's a good representation of media. So I'll be interested to look and see whether Jill Stein's conference was covered. She was pointing out that. Chris Hedges was pointing out that the Green Party is about where Syriza was before they took off. Syriza was about 4% in Greece, and now they are the ruling party in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And the Green Party is at 4%, and so they're just trying to point out, Hedges was trying to point out, we could take it from here.
Of course.
It could move forward. And
But then Syriza kind of caved in, didn't they?
Syriza is not exactly... a template, is it? You might want to listen to what Chris Hedges has to say if you want to give 8 minutes to it, because I would say it's a stem winder, but it's more of a barn burner.
I'll tell you
I'll tell you what,
we have a caller on the line. Why don't we go to the caller and then go on to Chris Hedges?
Okay.
Mitch is on the line. Morning, Mitch.
Yeah, I want to be brief because I want to hear what Chris Hedges has to say, too.
Mm-hmm.
But as to the caller earlier who talked about the electorate generally not doing their homework, and there's less of an excuse now that homework can be drawn beyond the corporate captured media online, as you pointed out, Pear, I was very disappointed. First of all, let me say that I heard Dave Miller's piece for OPB, and I've criticized Dave Miller in the past, but I have to say that African-American dump truck driver who was moonlighting as an Uber driver, that piece you referred to was fantastic, and I'm glad that Dave recorded it on his phone and that OPB played it. It's a point of view we don't get from working-class America, and especially African-American working-class America. The other thing I wanted to point out is that I was a little disappointed in Amy Goodman, who is a hero of ours, this morning in the interview that preceded your program, because she had Joe Stiglitz on and they were talking about the TPP and how the Sanders-backed Clinton juggernaut choosing Tim Kaine, who is a big supporter of trade agreements. Just yesterday, NPR, not OPB, but NPR National, was trying again to pass this this bit of sophistry where they talk about how Americans who are responding to Bernie Sanders are against global trade. And that's something the Portland Tribune does all the time, is use that to say that because you think these agreements are stacked to advance the interests of the 1% international business community as opposed to working class on either side of the ocean, you must be anti-trade. No, we're not anti-trade. There was global trade long before the first NAFTA agreement. There was global trade. But what bothers me about people in, who need to do their homework is that President Obama passed in 2012 a trade agreement with South Korea called the Korus FTA Free Trade Agreement, K-O-R-U-S, Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, 2012. We have had 4 years of results. There are outcomes. People can talk about those outcomes. Amy Goodman had Joe Stiglitz, a Nobel Prize-winning economist who is critical of TPP. They would not assess Obama's record with a trade deal that he already passed. They went back to NAFTA, and they... And it's always back to NAFTA. We've had a lot since NAFTA, and it continues the decline of the American working class, and that and those outcomes are never referenced. We do not get a trade deal scoreboard of what our so-called party, the Democratic, and I'm not a registered Democrat anymore, but we certainly can't consider the GOP standing up for free trade, although here they are trying to embarrass Clinton by coming out against TPP more than her vice presidential pick.
Well, let's, I think people should dig into that some more. So why don't we have, we have 15 minutes left on this show. Why don't we, thanks a lot for that call, Mitch.
And
why
thank don't, you. I'm looking forward to Hedges.
Let's hear some Chris Hedges.
Okay, yeah, I was, the meeting hall was crammed. I mean, do you remember... 23 years ago, sitting in the front room of KABU with my daughter on their coloring book and maybe six people talking about committees of correspondence. Well, this was 700-800 people, and mm-hmm. just as many people as could possibly get in there. It was cooking hot. You got to roll that tape.
Okay, let's hear Chris Hedges.
The parade of useful idiots, the bankrupt liberal class that long ago sold its soul to corporate power, is now led by Senator Bernie Sanders. His final capitulation, symbolized by his pathetic motion to suspend the roll call giving Hillary Clinton a Democratic nomination by acclamation, is an abject betrayal of millions of his supporters and his call for a political revolution. No doubt, the Democrats will continue to let Sanders be a member of the Democratic caucus. No doubt, the Democrats will continue to agree not to run a serious candidate against him in Vermont. No doubt, Sanders will be given an ample platform and media opportunities to shill for Clinton and the corporate machine. No doubt, he will remain a member of the political establishment. Sanders squandered his most important historical moment. He had a chance, one chance, to take the energy, anger, and momentum and walk out the doors of the Wells Fargo Center and into the streets to help build a third-party movement. His call to his delegates to face reality and support Clinton was an insulting repudiation of the reality his supporters, mostly young men and women, had overcome by lifting him from an obscure candidate polling at 12% into a serious contender for the nomination. Sanders not only sold out his base, he mocked it, and this was a spiritual wound, not a political one, and for this he must ask for forgiveness. Whatever resistance happens now will happen without him. Whatever political revolution happens now will happen without him. Whatever hope we have in sustainable future will happen without him.
Hey, what would we say about listening?
Sanders, that's all right, I'm sorry. Sanders, who once lifted up the yearnings of millions, has become an impediment to change.
Yeah.
He put his 30 Silver and joined with a bankrupt liberal establishment on behalf of a candidate who is a tool of Wall Street, a proponent of endless war, and an enemy of the working class.
That's right. Yeah.
Sanders, like all of the self-identified liberals who are whoring themselves out for the Democrats, will use fear as the primary reason to remain enslaved by the neoliberal assault.
That's right.
And in return, the corporate state will allow him and other useful idiots among the 1% to have their careers and construct pathetic monuments to themselves. The Trans-Pacific Partnership will be pushed through whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton is president. The fracking industry, fossil fuel industry, and animal agriculture industry will ravage the ecosystem whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton is president.
That's right.
The predatory financial institutions on Wall Street will trash the economy and keep the U.S. Treasury on, and loot the U.S. Treasury on the way to another economic collapse whether Donald Trump Hillary Clinton is president. Poor, unarmed people of color will be gunned down in the streets of our cities whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton
That's
is president.
Right.
The system of neo-slavery in our prisons where we keep poor men and women of color in cages because we have taken from them the possibility of employment, education, and dignity will be maintained whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton is president. Millions of undocumented workers will be deported whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton is president. Austerity programs will cut or abolish public services, further decay the infrastructure, and curtail social programs whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton is president. Money will replace the vote whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton is president, and half the country which now lives in poverty will remain in misery whether Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton is president. And this is not speculation.
That's right.
We know this because there has been total continuity on every issue, from trade agreements to war to mass deportation, between the Bush administration and the administration of Barack Obama.
That's right.
The problem is not Donald Trump. The problem is capitalism.
That's right.
And this is the beast we are called to fight and slay, and until that is done, nothing of substance will change. To reduce the political debate, as Sanders and others are doing to political personalities, is political infantilism. We have undergone a corporate coup d'etat. Donald Trump in slow motion, thank you, John Olson Saul. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton will not reverse this coup. Like Barack Obama, they know where the centers of power lie and they serve these centers of power. Change will come only when we have the tenacity, as many Sanders delegates did, to refuse to cooperate, to say no, to no longer participate in the political charade.
That's right.
Change will come when we begin acts of sustained mass civil disobedience. Change will come when the fear the corporate state uses to paralyze us is used by us to paralyze them. The Russian writer Alexander Harrison was speaking a century ago to a group of anarchists about how to overthrow the Tsar, reminded his listeners that it was not their job to save a dying system, but to replace it. We think we are the doctors, we are the disease. We are not here to reform the system. We are here to overthrow it.
That's right.
And that is the only possibility left to restore our democracy and save our planet. If we fail in this task, if this system of corporate capitalism and globalization is not dismantled, we are doomed. And this is the reality no one wants to speak about. We will have to be in the political wilderness perhaps for a decade, but a decade ago, Syriza, the party now ruling Greece, was polling at 4%, which is what the Green Party is polling at today. We will not bring about systemic change in one or two election cycles, but we can begin to build a counterweight to the corporate state. We can begin to push back. We must find the courage not to be afraid. We must find the courage to follow our conscience. We must find the courage to defy the corporate forces of death in order to affirm the forces of life.
Was just palpable, and that's why I'm saying that something new has started in Philadelphia. It wasn't just in that hall, though. It was all over Philadelphia, and I think that the mainstream media has missed that entirely, and I can't say that I'm surprised, but something new is cooking up, and that is a determination and a realization, as Hedges was saying, that we can get rid of this system or we'll be doomed by it.
Well, you know, there's still 3 months to go before Election Day. All sorts of things can happen. I get the feeling that all sorts of things will happen. It's
interesting times.
Yeah.
The curse.
Well.
Yeah, and so I've been having a very energetic time in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I've walked more than my 58-year-old legs would quite allow, so I'm taking it easy today. I do intend to go down if I can. I'm going to live stream another speech, this one by Kshama Sawant, also at the Socialist Convergence.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not absolutely certain I'll be able to do that. By the way, the Hedges speech, the Stein speech, and more are on Twitter on the Periscope app. If you use @KBU Press Watch, you can still find those. And I've discovered that I need to be consistent in the way that I archive them. So if you're looking for Socialist Convergence, you may have to play around with capitals, with separating the two words, with running them together with a hashtag. That way you can find all of the speeches. But they are there. I was using live stream. Sorry to slip to a technical discussion, but I did say to everyone I was going to use live stream, and then I found out that live stream just doesn't work all that well, I guess, with my equipment. And so I went instead to the Twitter Periscope live stream, and that's worked out much better and much better quality.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, Chris Hedges' speech was a barn burner. And, like I said before, Syriza did come to power very quickly. Of course, they were kind of a coalition of several other parties, but they kind of caved in the end. Maybe, I guess they're still around.
Oh, yeah, and that was disgusting, wasn't it? But it was the dynamic that brought them to power. It was the absolute desperation when people realized that mm-hmm. they were just in for it, and they were just going to be starved out by the ruling powers. And so they tried to get Syriza in to actually make a difference in it. And people within Syriza, once they realized that there was going to be a sellout, bailed from that party. So that's a whole different story. But I think that Hedges is pointing out, and he also mentions the Russian Revolution, 100 years ago. They had great hopes, too. And, what can we say about the Russian Revolution? I would say very broadly that the dead force of czarism and hierarchy kind of took over much of that revolution. And what parts weren't stained by that were dragged down by the Second World War. So
mm-hmm. Plus
it doesn't mean we can't try again, right?
Plus Stalin's paranoia. Well, the story is not over. I guess the story's not over on the Russian Revolution either, even though it started 100 years ago. Well, I think we're getting near the end of our time. I want to say that I think there is a rally to stop the sweep, along the Springwater Trail. And that is today, this afternoon at 3:30 p.m. outside City Hall. Now, I hear that Charlie Hales has delayed the sweep by 1 month, but I assume that the rally is still going to go on. That is 3:30 this afternoon at City Hall down there on 4th Avenue. So, Teresa, hey, have a good... It was great being on the show with you, and sort of sharing your experiences in Philadelphia. Thanks a lot for being with us, and you'll be back again next week, right?
Thanks so much, Perry. Yes, I'll be back, and I'll be broadcasting to all the ships at sea.
All the ships at sea. There we go. Okay, we had to get that in. Stay tuned to Air Cascadia coming up next.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland a couple minutes before 10 o'clock. And coming up in 15 minutes, we've got Flashpoints, today featuring a special edition of Flashpoints Elections Crimes Bulletin with Greg Pallast in Philadelphia. And American Indian Movement co-founder Bill Means speaks out against the racist dual standard by which wannabe Reagan assassin John Hinckley Jr. is set to be freed while Leonard Peltier remains behind bars for over 40 years. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Natasha Delafine interviews writer Joe Baker about her historical fiction novel, A County Road, A Tree. And at 11:30 on The Film Show, host SW Concer speaks with legendary documentary filmmaker D.A. Pennebaker and fellow director and partner Chris Hegedus. Pennebaker's groundbreaking films include Don't Look Back, Monterey Pop, and The War Room. That is all coming up this morning on The Boo. Next up, we've got Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Stick around.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual Peace Festival, Saturday, July 30th at 5 p.m. at the Dolores Winningstad Theater in Portland. The Peace Festival theme this year is Just Us Speaks, and will showcase youth from all across the city with different backgrounds, worldviews, experiences, and insights who will share their hearts through the performing arts. Again, that's the third annual Peace Festival, Saturday, July 30th at 5 p.m. at the Dolores Winningstad Theater, 1111 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.